Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. Steve Cohen, the billionaire hedge funder and New York Mets owner, in his first CNBC interview, part of his higher profile.
I realized I enjoyed it. I had no idea.
Cohen's $2.5 billion baseball purchase.
You don't think about this as philanthropic, do you?
I do.
You do?
That's why I bought the team. I actually view it as a civic responsibility.
And his other investments like golf and betting on AI's tailwinds.
I don't see it as a bubble. I think the markets are discounting some of what they think AI is going to do for companies.
Plus, Steve Cohen on his long, rocky road to being liked on Wall Street.
I'm the same guy. It just shows you that the world keeps turning. Enjoy your life and, you know, it's just amazing what can happen.
That big interview today and an update on Disney's boardroom battle.
This has been an unusual proxy battle in many, many ways.
It is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand by, Joe, in 3, 2, 1, his mic, cue.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan. Becky is, Andrew, I think she's on a boat, actually, coming through. There's so much rain back here. I'm not sure it's necessarily an arc, but she's here. She'll be out, but it's been raining for 40 days and 40 nights, basically. It's not over yet. You're in South Carolina. They have great weather most of the time. What do you have coming up, and how's the weather?
So far, so good on the weather. You know, the last time we have been here in Kiawah Island, actually, we've done this outside. We're doing it today inside on the off chance, actually, that the weather gets a little bit worse than it has been. We are at the annual Global Sports Leadership Conference that's put on by Brewing Capital and Sportico. A big exclusive interview. First time ever on CNBC. Steve Cohen is going to be with us now, of course, the Mets owner, but maybe better known to those on Wall Street as the chairman and CEO of Point 72. So many folks in the sports world here. We have many of the commissioners from all over the league. I think Michael Rubin is coming down. I saw A-Rod here last night. Mark Lohr, of course, who's involved with him, trying to buy the Timberwolves. You really just can't walk around this place without seeing somebody who's in the middle of one of the big major sports deals right now. And so we're going to be talking about all of that this morning. Yeah. From
he was probably hoping that the Mets would have won a game at this point. But
yep. Well,
no,
we're going to talk about that.
They were going to play yesterday.
They say money can't buy love, and money can't buy love, and money can't always buy winning. So
there's no way they're playing.
See.
No way they were playing a home game yesterday. There's just no way. And it didn't happen. But we'll try again today. Supposed to play the Tigers yesterday. But that did not happen. 0-4, but it's early. It doesn't matter. You know, Yankees are like 5-1 or something. They're telling me to move on. You believe that? The Dow and S&P fell for a second straight day, weighed down by doubts that the Fed has inflation under control. And who knows now? People are actually saying it out loud. There may be no rate cuts this year. NASDAQ fell 1%, S&P 7/10. Of a percent. The Medicare Medicare stuff didn't help either with
United
Healthcare.
No, because that was United Health and hurt all the other insurers.
Which was a Dow.
The other thing I would say is, look, I had more concerns about this on Friday than I did based on Monday's numbers. Friday's data showed that the inflation was running hotter than expected. The revised previous inflation's numbers, it was the ISM. Yeah, the idea that manufacturing is strong and running, I mean, that's the best case scenario. If the Fed's not going to cut rates, it's doing it because there's a stronger economy. That's the part that you are happy to see. Strong economy, strong inflation, not so much.
The treasuries and commodities responding in kind. Treasuries now, are we 440 yet? 436. And then, you know, oil, 85. Gold, long dormant, has been hitting some new highs for the past I guess, 3 or 4 months, really. We talked to Katie Stockton about a month ago about the long saucer that we saw in gold and that it had broken out. And it was one of those instances where she says she doesn't know what resistance is because it's never been here before. So you can't really talk about it. But again, gold up another $11, so closing in on 2,300. But there are inflation concerns.
Reuters is reporting that Disney has secured enough shareholder votes to defeat Nelson Peltz's Trian Fund in a proxy battle. That report says enough votes had been cast as of last night to put Disney's board of directors safely ahead of Trian's two challengers. Reuters sources did caution that there's always a possibility that some shareholders may change their vote. They're allowed to do that up through the meeting today. A separate Bloomberg report said Vanguard is backing Disney's slate of nominees. Vanguard is the largest investor in Disney with an 8.3% stake. That stock this morning down by about 19 cents.
I don't know if you saw this, Becky, but, you know, Bill Ackman tweeted out last night about this report, I believe. And I thought it was fascinating. He said there's been several of these reports saying that Disney is winning its proxy contest with Nelson Peltz. He said that he doesn't have an investment in Disney. But he thought that it was useful, as he said, to point out the inappropriateness of what he said is the leaks to the press about this. He said only a company and its advisors have access to how shareholders have voted before the day of the annual meeting. My understanding is it is illegal to release the outcome of the vote prior to being finalized, as it has an effect of manipulating the outcome. We've talked about this in the context of political elections. Here the company and its advisors, or somebody, has leaked that Disney is winning the contest. It says it's inappropriate and they should not have done so, if in fact that's the case. I don't know who the sources are, but I say it because it's actually an interesting thing. It's very rare where we've seen a proxy contest in recent years that I can recall where you had reports prior to the outcome,
half the
vote, going to win.
Yeah, they kept saying, you know, with half the with about half the votes in, Disney's doing. That was really, it was weird. With only half.
There's a lot of things that are weird about this proxy fight. Normally, companies don't get into the fray. They kind of play like they are above what the shareholders are doing or what the activists are doing. This has been a case where the company has taken activist tactics and turned it back on the activists, which tells you one of a couple of things. Either they were concerned that they were going to lose, or this was a situation where Bob Iger said, I just can't possibly stand the thought of dealing with Nelson Peltz on the board. I didn't come back out of retirement to deal with that. But this has been an unusual proxy battle in many, many ways.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up, Mets owner, billionaire, and Point 72 chairman and CEO Steve Cohen. In his first interview on CNBC ever, he talks the baseball season and all his sports investments, like golf.
My belief is a four-day work week is coming. That should fit into a theme of more leisure for people, which means golf rounds will go up.
And as an asset manager, he's eyeing the Fed, well, just like the rest of us.
The Fed thinks they, you know, eventually is going to come down to 2% inflation rate.
What do you think?
I think that's going to be hard.
That big interview right after this.
We could try to explain what it's like to get your work done on a John Deere mower, compact tractor, or Gator XUV. But to really understand the feeling, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. I'm producer Katie Kramer. Our highlight interview today is with Steve Cohen. He's a billionaire, he's the new owner of the New York Mets, and he's the chairman and CEO of Point 72, a global asset manager with about $32 billion under management. Billion, with a B. So, the $2.4 billion he spent buying that baseball team in Queens, no biggie.
He's not thinking of it as an investment per se, something he makes clear in today's discussion. Cohen is also invested in golf, putting money into the PGA and the New York team in the Tomorrow Golf League. The TGL was founded by two legends of the sport, Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. This play for sports business has put Cohen squarely in the limelight, and historically, he's rarely done interviews. Today's conversation is his first on CNBC ever. But Cohen isn't a stranger to press. One of his former hedge funds paid a $1.8 billion fine in an insider trading scandal that involved eight of Cohen's portfolio managers. That was more than a decade ago, in 2013. He's since rebranded the fund as part of the Point72 firm. It's Point72 Asset Management. Cohen's firm has also faced a lawsuit and later a complaint over treatment of women in the workplace. Today, Cohen's mostly known as the billionaire owner of the Mets and an active poster on social media platform X during baseball season, of course. Steve Cohen joined our Andrew Ross Sorkin on site in Kiawah Island, South Carolina, today on our TV broadcast.
It is great to have you.
Good
on the program
here,
for the very first time. For the very first time.
Hey, you know, you got to try everything once, right?
Got to try everything once. Well, we'll see whether we get to do it more than once. I want to talk to you about so many things. I want to talk to you about sports, the business of sports, owning this team now.
Sure.
And then I want to get into the markets and what you're thinking about more broadly as well. But where I wanted to start was actually the team this year, unfortunately, given the win streak, or really the opposite in terms of where we are, how you think about that as an owner, but how you think about that as a hedge fund manager?
Well, I mean, it's only four games into the season,
right?
Be the equivalent of getting off to a bad start, let's say in a hedge fund year. You have a couple down days early in January. You still got a lot of time left to, do what you normally do. And so, yeah, nobody wants to start 0-4. I mean, it's early, right? And, you know, during the season, you're going to have losing streaks. We just happen to have one at the beginning.
So what is this like for you? Now, I mean, your whole life, I think, has fundamentally changed. You're now in the public eye in a way. You haven't been. There's been a shift in the public eye, and now you're actually doing interviews and things and being more public. How do you feel just about that?
You know, it's something that I knew buying the Mets would be much more public, but I enjoy it. You know, like I realized I enjoyed it. I had no idea, right? When you sit behind screens for as long as I have, and you're kind of, you know, not necessarily, you know, have to do that type of stuff. And so I actually enjoy it. I actually enjoy interacting with the fans and doing the press conferences. And you know, it's just a stretch for me, you know, something different.
And how much of doing what you've done in business is similar or different to this in terms of the analytics, the way you think about, you trade stocks.
Yes.
Own a team, you trade players.
Right.
Is it similar or totally different?
I mean, it's different. I mean, you know, people think that I'm not making the decisions. I mean, my baseball people are making the decisions. My job is to, you know, when they need me to support their decision, you know, they come to me and say, this is what I want to do. I've never said no to anything. And so, I mean, we have discussions and we talk about it. But I'm not making, you know, those ideas are not coming from me, and which is totally different than running my hedge fund. My hedge fund, I'm much more involved. But, you know, frankly, in my hedge fund also, we have 200 portfolio managers. I'm not telling them what to do either. Okay, I give them the risk limits and things like that. And I'm always available if they need to discuss anything. So I'm used to operating in a very decentralized way, and I give people a lot of rope.
There's big questions about baseball, both the valuations of these teams. You spent a lot of money on yours, and also how much money these teams spend on a given year for players. The different markets, big markets, small markets.
Yes.
What do you think of the system right now in terms of what's happened in baseball?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're in one of those moments in baseball where people are thinking about, okay, what do we like about the system, what we don't? You've got 30 owners, you've got 30 different opinions. And so, you know, we're still trying to figure it out. There's no doubt that smaller market clubs aren't crazy about large market clubs spending a lot of money. Operating within the rules that baseball sets out.
Does money buy winning? I mean, people say money doesn't buy love.
Clearly not. Okay,
right.
Okay, because we tried that. I mean, the real problem is if you're trying to build a team through free agency, that's such a tough place to be. because you're fighting the aging curve. You're buying players based on their previous history, but they're getting older. Right. As they get older, performance over time declines. And so it's a tough place to be. So what you really want to do is develop talent, which is no different than what I do in my hedge fund. Okay, and that's the similarities between the two.
Okay, but you have been famous for cutting your losses in the hedge fund world.
Yeah.
Famously. If things are not going well, you cut your losses. Can you do that in baseball?
Well, I kind of did it last year, right?
You kind of did. That's where I was going. That's where the question was going.
Yeah, so you're leading me to that question. I looked at it and realized that the team was probably not going to make the playoffs. And even if it did, probably wasn't going to get very far in the playoffs. And so I think at that point we had a 15% chance of making the playoffs. A lot of teams in front of us. It would have been hard to pull off. And so we had contracts that were, I felt it wasn't going to change in 23 and 24. It probably wouldn't get any better. So I did a complete pivot.
Right.
And I think I shocked baseball in the extent that I did it. But for me, it's just natural because, I looked and said, okay, I don't like the positions I have.
Right.
And so I wanted to make a change.
You want a ring. How many years do you think it will take you to get there? How much will it cost?
Well, I don't care about the cost side. I mean, I think over time,
But do you think, as philanthropic, do you?
I do.
You do?
That's why I bought the team. Okay. Well, that's exactly why I bought the team. And I said in my original press conference, if I can make millions of people happy, how cool is that? And so I actually view it as a civic responsibility. Now, listen, nobody wants to lose money forever and spend money and not have success. And to me, I deem success as not only winning the World Series, getting in the playoffs and winning the World Series. It's also developing a deep farm system that creates talent over the years, over and over again.
So on the economic piece of it, though,
yeah.
What I was going to ask is the valuations of these teams.
Yeah.
Where do they go in a world? We were talking about Jimmy Patero's here from ESPN. We're all wondering what's happened to linear television.
Right.
I know you can't talk about individual stocks. We were talking earlier in the week about how your company had some of your PMs had clearly bought Fox.
Yeah.
What do you think happens to the media landscape, if you will? And this is sort of an investment question, as it relates to whatever happens to that impacting the valuation of sports teams like your own.
Well, you would think that valuations are tied into profitability, right? Or some metric. And, right now, because of what's going on in the cable industry and media in general, revenues for teams are probably going to go down over the short term as we figure out what the new model is. It's clearly going to be streaming, but the question is it going to be bundled with, other, we're all, baseball, all sports are trying to figure it out. Some sports are better off than others. NFL does a national package, right? And that most of the revenues come from that. In baseball, revenues for teams are local revenues. And so that's a problem, right? Because now revenues are going down. Now, when you look at the appreciation of let's take baseball. Baseball's only appreciated teams, I think, 6% a year since, the early 2000s. I don't think that's extraordinary returns. And so when you think about it, you could probably have done better in an index fund.
Let me ask you this, though. One of the pieces or component parts is the future of betting in the business. Real estate, one of the things that is in play with Citi Field is this idea that you might be able to build a 50-acre both park and mall and all sorts of
not
things.
Not a mall.
And
not a mall.
And
not
a casino.
A mall. Okay.
And a casino.
Yeah, we call it an entertainment complex, music, gaming, 1,500 hotel rooms, 25-acre park. We're going to build a separate area where fans can go and go to restaurants.
What's it going to take to get that approved in New York? How much has to be given by the taxpayers? Yeah. Taxpayers don't want to pay for it.
I totally get that. We are financing it privately. It's going to be an $8 billion project.
And you think you have to get nothing from the city?
I mean, I'm not as steeped in the weeds on, but generally, I would say the vast, vast majority of the money is coming from private sources, me and my partner.
Right. And the casino piece, the betting piece, how important is that?
Well, that's the economic engine.
Right.
You can't spend $8 billion and have a bunch of restaurants. That's not going to work.
Right.
Okay, so you need an economic engine, and that's it. And, you know, that's
right.
And if it, you know, that's going to provide all the right. other great stuff.
As a guy yeah. in the markets, how yeah. do you feel about betting as it relates to sports? I mean, the yeah. reason I ask is Otani's in the news, right? Everybody's
yes.
saying what's yeah. you know, what happened.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, I'm curious what yeah. you think happened there. But
I have no idea, but I'm going to trust him.
You're going to trust him?
I'm going to trust him. Yeah.
Because
he just seems like someone that is so focused on his stuff that I could see how.
But do you think that the league just has to figure out? I mean, given the sort of superstar status that
yeah.
he has, they
yeah.
they can't let this.
Well, they have to investigate, and they will. Okay, I mean, and you know, they're good at that type of stuff, and then they'll get to the bottom of it.
Separately, and we're here at a big sports conference. You've invested in golf.
Yes.
In yeah. a big way.
That's right.
You're partnered now with Fenway as well as part of that.
That's right.
What is your yeah. your thesis on golf, and
yeah.
what do you think is going to happen with LIV as well?
Yeah.
In terms of PIF and,
yeah.
and the Saudis?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we think it's an interesting investment. It's a global sport. Rounds are going up on a yearly basis. You know, and so we think the way it's been run, we think we can improve the operations, improve and make it much more profitable. I love golf. Okay, I mean, you know.
You're a golfer.
I brought my clubs here.
You brought your clubs here,
right?
Okay.
I'm going to be on the range later today.
The wind is not
yeah.
good.
That's okay.
You can blame the wind.
You know, it's an outdoor sport, right? Same thing at baseball. Sometimes the wind blows. So we think it's a really interesting investment. Obviously, you know, golf's at a moment where there's a lot of stuff going on that needs to be worked out. But we think we can work it out, and we're excited to get involved and help the sport grow.
You have a thesis, I'm told, that mm-hmm. you actually shared with Yasser from PIF.
That's right.
Yeah. About yeah. the work week. We always talk about sort of working from home, working yeah. from the office, that you think is actually behind part of your investment in golf and actually may be behind your investment in or thoughts about how the whole yeah. economy changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have done the golf investment anyway, because I think it's a longer-term thought. But my belief is a four-day work week is coming. You know, between the advent of AI, you know, generally, we hear from people that Fridays are just not people are not as productive on Fridays, and so I just think it's an eventuality. When it happens, hard to know. But that should fit into a theme of more leisure for people, which means golf rounds will go up.
And, so people are going to play more golf on Fridays.
And interest will go up. And so, yeah, I guess courses will be crowded
on Fridays. What are the other investment ideas then around that idea?
Well, anything around, you know, I would say leisure, travel,
right?
Experiences, all that type of stuff, right? I mean, that makes, you know, if people have more time, they're going to.
And but you don't anticipate letting your traders and PMs not work.
Well,
on, frankly,
up,
on Saturday, they're working.
You
these
know
guys.
Something? If they're taking off Friday and they have a portfolio, that's a problem. Okay, if the markets are open. So forgetting us. Okay, I mean, the vast majority of people will get an opportunity, I think, at some point to have a 3-day weekend.
You know, I'd asked you earlier how it feels to sort of shift into this more public role. But I am curious how it feels to be, you are now a beloved person in New York.
Maybe,
and
okay, we haven't won.
We'll see
okay.
if you win.
Okay, we'll
but
see how long that
real,
lasts.
But that's been yeah. a real shift from yeah. over the last 10 years and all of the headlines, you know, 10
yeah.
years ago. And
yeah.
I'm just so curious how you, on a very personal level,
yeah.
have felt about whatever that journey has felt like.
Well, I'm the same guy, okay? I haven't changed, okay? It's just so, I just think it's so interesting how 10 years ago, you know, obviously tons of articles that were highly negative of me and my firm. And then the New York Times writes an article, like a glowing article. I'm the same guy, okay? And just shows you that, you know, the world keeps turning and, you know, just, you know, enjoy your life and, you know, it's just amazing what can happen.
I do want to talk about investing and where you are. I know you can't talk about individual names, but
yeah. Yeah.
Put it in baseball terms, given that's your other business now. What inning are we in? Are we in some kind of bubble in terms of where the equity markets are?
I don't see it as a bubble. I mean, I think the markets are discounting some of what they think AI is going to do for companies.
You think it's discounting?
Discounting.
So you think that there's even more upside
I
as
do.
A result of AI?
I, you know, my view is this is a really durable theme. I'll give you one little anecdote. My CTO comes to me and says I can save the firm $25 million by using these LLMs to improve our efficiency. Now, we're a nice-sized firm. We're not a huge firm. So imagine what big companies can do. And that's just one thing, okay? So it gives you a little bit of a look into what's right. possible.
And so, you know, people, there is a view. Yeah. Is the AI boom, what does that mean for chips?
Yeah.
What does that mean? So when you look at that, who do you think the winners and losers are?
Well, listen, I'm not going to talk about individual stocks, okay? But there's going to be big winners and big losers, okay? Because this is transformational. So you got to do the work and figure out, what companies are going to benefit. And frankly, there's going to be companies that you haven't even heard of. There'll be new companies. I mean, when you have technological change like this, it sort of reminds me of the 90s. Where the best new companies came out of that period.
But does that mean we're in 1996? Does that mean we're in 1999?
We're not in 99, okay? I mean, I don't think so. And so because I think it's a durable theme, I think, now, it doesn't mean it goes up in a straight line, right? I mean, it may take a while for this AI theme, actually to really take hold within companies, and they're trying to figure out how to use it.
Right.
And so, it has the potential to change how my firm operates. If you're a company and you're not thinking about this, you're going to wake up one day and go, we're in trouble.
What do you think about where the Fed is today?
Yeah.
Are you expecting cuts to come this year at all anymore? I mean, how do you think about what the Fed's doing and how much that's propelling the market one way or the other?
Yeah, I think the market expects 3 cuts. I think that's the number. I don't disagree with that. I think inflation's been, somewhat contained. And I think, ultimately what it'll come down to is that a true statement or not. The Fed thinks they, eventually is going to come down to 2% inflation rate.
What do you think?
I think that's going to be hard.
Okay? So what, is that 3% for you?
I don't get in the weeds quite like that. Is it 2.5? I mean, those are Fed watchers.
Right.
I think it comes down to, there's still a lot of underemployment in the country. And so it really comes down to if growth is too fast, then, you start getting constraints on labor and wages go up. And that may be a problem for it.
Right.
But it's hard to, we're in one of these periods where I don't think many people know exactly what's going to happen.
We keep talking on the broadcast about whether we're in this sort of risk on, risk off situation. We look at the Magnificent Seven. We look at the NASDAQ. On the flip side, we keep looking at Bitcoin. I don't know, do you own any Bitcoin?
I own very little. I own a little bit.
But you own a little bit?
Yeah, like really little.
For what reason?
No, the only reason, my son is really into it. And so he had me play around and try to figure out how to transact on Coinbase. So I bought a little bit.
Do you have a take on what's going on with Bitcoin or if it what it really represents?
Yeah. I don't follow it that closely. It's not kind of what I do. I mean, there's certainly an element of the population that believes in it. And maybe it's the new gold. Hard to know, right? So I don't have a strong opinion on it.
The reason I ask you about Bitcoin, though, is to the extent that some people think that's a hedge against, inflation on one side.
Well, that's the same thing as gold, right?
Well, that's the question. Is it, right?
Well, it's a new instrument. I mean, that's the argument. We'll see. I mean, really hard to know. I think ultimately, Bitcoin's separate from crypto.
Right.
But I think ultimately it's about use case. Will crypto develop use cases? So, Bitcoin's interesting, but it's just a piece of that whole ecosystem.
And then in terms of how you think about, we were talking earlier about the election. Do you think the election's going to have a huge impact on the markets at this point?
I think a little bit. Obviously, if Trump comes in, you can imagine tariffs. That's certainly possible.
Right.
He's probably going to be perceived good for growth. But growth has been fine already. And if he comes in and it's good for growth in a constrained labor environment, that may stoke some inflation fears. It's possible. But I don't see that big a difference either way.
Is that inside the firm, is there a house view about how the election pans out?
Well, we think today we probably say Trump has an edge, but it's so early.
Right.
That, you know, it could change. I mean, these things are volatile.
These things are very volatile.
Yeah.
Steve, we want to thank you for being here. It's been great to have this conversation.
Here.
We hope to do this again.
I'm available next week.
You're available next week. We'll hopefully see you next week.
Right.
Steve Cohen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Andrew.
Good luck with the season, and we'll see where things go. And good luck with your golf this afternoon, and hopefully the weather will cooperate.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
That is Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. And an announcement for you. We have been nominated for a Webby Award for our special podcast series featuring Becky Quick's last interview with longtime Berkshire Hathaway Vice Chairman Charlie Munger.
Is there anything left on your bucket list? Anything you'd like to do?
Well, that's an interesting question. I am so old and weak compared to what I was when I was 96.
And you can help. Show your support for us at vote.webbyawards.com. That's vote.webbyawards.com. We'll include the exact link to our category in today's show notes. Now, you can only vote once per category for the very best of the internet. We'd love to have you in our corner for this year's Webbies. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.